Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the April NJ EDA Telephonic Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed into queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star and then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Vice Chairman Charles Sarlo. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Operator. Good morning, everyone, members of the public. Charles Sarlo here on behalf of the EDA. I'd like to call to order the NJEDA public board meeting on April 14th, 2021, starting here at 10 a.m. or shortly thereafter. Tim, can you read the open public notice?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger and the Times at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Pursuant to the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, this is a public hearing, and comments are invited on any private activity bond projects presented today. Back to you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Maureen, can you please call the roll for the board members?
Okay. Vice Chairman Charles Sarlo?
Here.
Phil Elagia?
Here.
Virginia Bauer?
Here.
Fred Dumont?
Here.
Aisha Glover?
Present.
Rosemarie Hicks?
Here.
Robert Shimko?
Here.
Althea Marley?
Here.
Okay, we have Commissioner Robert Asaro?
Here.
Commissioner Marlene Caridi?
Present.
Okay, Brian Wilson from the Governor's Office?
Here.
Catherine Brennan for State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo?
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean LaTourette?
Here.
Okay, Mr. Vice Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manira.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you, Manira. Members of the board, good morning, everyone. And I'd like to, before you, you have the March 10th, 2020 meeting minutes. Before we act on them, as has been our procedure with these telephonic board meetings, I kindly remind you that on any matters where you're making a motion or a second, to please state your name for the record. So Manira could record it for the first and the second motion. Thank you. So I'd like to now move to get a motion on the March 10th meeting minutes of the board. Do I have a motion?
Curry Ball, I'll move it.
And a second?
Caridi, second.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? I'd like to move to a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing no opposed. Any recusals or abstentions? Okay. So moved. Motion passes. We're going to move to the CEO's report. Tim, can you please address the board with your monthly report?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman, and good morning, everyone, and hope everyone's having a good week so far. We have a ton going on, and there's a pretty meaty agenda here, so I'll try and be brief. I will be brief for sure. A few things to highlight. One, on COVID response and ongoing COVID activity, obviously the clouds are parting. The vaccine progress continues to be incredible. I think about 5.5 million shots in arms now. As of yesterday, and so certainly brighter days are ahead. But particularly for small businesses, the economic crisis spawned by this pandemic is still very real and very present. Governor Murphy in the last 2 weeks or so signed five different pieces of legislation to approve a significant amount of money, $100 million in total, of additional CARES Act money, CRF money, to support small businesses. Almost all that money will now come through the EDA. The vast majority of that money will be voted on in a few minutes by you for a phase four of the grant program. This has been an extraordinary effort in response to an extraordinary crisis. The EDA, under Governor Murphy's leadership, has already overseen and distributed more than $250 million of federal funding to support small businesses through this crisis through a variety of programs. And now we're going to, pending your support in a few minutes, get cracking on the next $100 million, because we know that this crisis is, again, it's ending, but it's not over. And so we know there's work to be done. The buckets that Patience and Bruce and the team will talk about in a minute, I think, reflect important priorities, not just of where the COVID crisis has impacted most significantly, but also an equity and an inclusion perspective. Childcare is one of the targeted industries. Restaurants, of course, which have been hit so hard. Micro businesses with five or fewer employees, which is an incredibly important effort in general, and particularly during this crisis, because something like 90% of minority-owned businesses are some form of micro-business in one form or fashion. And so when we're talking about micro-businesses, yes, we're talking about very small businesses, but we're also talking disproportionately about minority and women-owned firms, which is obviously an important goal for a whole bunch of reasons. And so, again, lots going on COVID, COVID response, more to come in a few minutes on that. In other matters, the clean energy agenda, I think, continues to be an incredibly important focus. We got some great news at the end of March from President Biden and his administration with regard to their intent to, pardon the pun, put a big tailwind behind offshore wind, particularly the Ørsted project, the Ocean Wind project, that is New Jersey's first 1.1 gigawatt offshore wind project, to get that through the federal permitting process. We think that's an extraordinary opportunity. It ties directly into the wind port that we're building in South Jersey and Salem County. And just to have an administration in Washington that is so strongly supportive of offshore wind and so many of the other priorities that Governor Murphy's been focused on for the last three-plus years is such a sea change for how we're going to be able to advance, you know, the stronger and fairer agenda that Governor Murphy's been focused on from the get-go. Relatedly, we've also made really good progress on the ZIP, NJ ZIP pilot program, which was approved earlier in the year. This is using the REGI money to support medium and heavy-duty vehicles, trucks, essentially. The pilot program centered around Newark and Camden, which, again, is an important economic justice dimension in and around the ports and the disproportionate pollution and emissions impact that those communities are faced and are forced to deal with. And that's off to a strong start so far. With lots of interest in that program, and we'll have some more news on that in the coming days and weeks. The other thing I'd mention, it'll be probably the main event for our meeting in May, is the Emerge program. Emerge is the successor to Grow. It's one of the sort of core programs in the Economic Recovery Act that Governor Murphy signed on January 7th of this year. We have, as of about 2 weeks ago, promulgated a draft of the initial rules and regulations that would govern that program. We've had two out of the three public listening sessions. The third one is this afternoon to engage with stakeholders and get feedback, because we've said from the outset that we're the first draft, or the first public draft of these regulations certainly won't be perfect, and they can only get better with public input. And so we look forward to that third session this afternoon, and then bringing those rules and those regulations to this board's consideration in May, and begin accepting applications in late May, which is an important priority to help support growth as we again come out of the COVID crisis and head to recovery mode. That's going to be a really important tool, one of many important tools that are included in the Economic Recovery Act. So a lot going on. There's a lot on the agenda for today as well. So I will yield back to you, Mr. Vice Chairman, and I'm happy to take questions or just jump into the agenda.
Very good. Thank you, Tim. On behalf of the board members, I just want to, again, thank all the employees of the EDA and the leadership team and yourself, Tim, for their extraordinary efforts over the last several months, not only with the COVID response programs that are being implemented, but now we have on the plate of the EDA all the programs under the Economic Recovery Act of 2020. I think it's a heavy workload, but a very critical workload for the state of New Jersey. And I just, again, want to commend the entire EDA staff for a job well done. Any other board members have any comments or questions for Tim? Okay, hearing none, we'd like to move to the on with the board agenda. The first is going to be a COVID-19 response. The committee chair is Aisha Glover. Aisha, would you like to say a few words with regard to your committee's review of these matters?
Sure. Good morning. Definitely. Just continue to feel hopeful about the work of the committee and the item that's being brought forward today to the board for discussion, which we reviewed during the committee. The item at hand specifically is phase four of the Small Business Emergency Assistance Grant Program, and really just represents the work undertaken by the staff and evaluated by the committee. So I just want to recognize how much EDA has really just been responsive to the needs of, as Tim said, the micro businesses, small businesses, and Main Street retail businesses. So just I'm encouraged by today's agenda item. So I'll turn it over to the staff to walk us through.
Great. Thank you, Aisha. Okay, so the first matter is going to be presented by staff member Patience Purdy, Director of Strategic and Program Initiatives. The item is the use of the Corona Relief Fund appropriation and creation of Small Business Emergency Assistance Grant Program Phase 4. This is an approval for a Fifth Amendment to the Memorandum of Understanding with the New Jersey Department of Treasury, whereby the EDA will accept $85 million in funds from the Corona Relief Fund, delegated of authority to the CEO to accept up to $200 million if additional funds become available, creation of a fourth phase of the Small Business Emergency Assistance Grant Program and associate program implementation measures and delegations of the authority associated with the implementation of the program. Patience?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman, and good morning to all of our board members. As the Vice Chairman stated and Tim mentioned in his CEO report, we are here to present the fourth phase of the Small Business Emergency Assistance Grant Program. There are several approvals noted in the summary here. The first couple noted by Mr. Sarlo. Additionally, we'll be asking for approval to issue one or more purchase orders to 22nd Century Technologies to bring on temporary employees in order to administer this phase or any phase of the grant program with a maximum aggregate cost of $923,000. Delegation to authority staff to accept other governmental funding and or unrestricted gifts, grants, or dedicate previously received unrestricted gifts or grants to fund phase four of the program. Delegation to authority staff to impose additional requirements as may be required by law as a condition of accepting governmental funding, provided that those requirements are consistent with the parameters of the program. Delegation to authority staff to approve individual applications to the program, and because the specifications are streamlined and will result in non-discretionary decisions, the delegated authority requested includes the authority to decline applications and in the event of appeals from those declinations, issue final administrative decisions. As well, finally, delegation to the CEO to extend the deadline for disbursement and use of funds if the New Jersey Treasury and or CRF deadlines are extended, reallocate funds from or to another CRF-funded program, and or return to New Jersey Treasury any amounts remaining after all applications have been processed and all eligible applications have been funded or as otherwise required by law or the MOU with Treasury. The specifications to the program and the MOU are attached in your board package. As far as background, I think everyone is pretty familiar with the first three phases of the program starting last March, or April, I think, was the first board meeting on those. So I will highlight, though, that throughout the first three phases of the program, we have approved nearly 44,000 grant applications, totaling roughly $210 million, the largest portion of those in the Phase 3 program. As Tim mentioned and as the governor announced, $85 million of the $100 million in bills that were signed is being dedicated to this Phase 4 grant funding, with up to $4 million of that funding to potentially be used for future administrative costs of the grant program. The members are asked to approve the MOU amendment with NJ Treasury for the utilization of the $85 million. That MOU is attached in draft form to your board package. Given the authority's experiences across all three phases of the grant program, staff is recommending for Phase 4 utilizing a similar approach to Phase 3 with dedicated funding to micro and small businesses and continued set-asides for the restaurant industry, as well as the addition of child care providers. The administrative costs that we're seeking, the MOU would allocate up to 5% of the total grant funds, essentially $4 million, as noted earlier, to administer Phase 4. We'd be working with 22nd Century Technologies again, as they are on a state contract procured by the Division of Purchase and Property. The details of the Phase 4 program, as noted in your memo, are going to follow eligibility-wise, similar to Phase 3, with businesses with up to 50 full-time equivalent employees and no restrictions by NAICS code as far as eligibility. There will be NAICS code restrictions for the buckets of funding. Eligibility cap will be 50 FTEs, and all businesses registered in New Jersey and meeting the above eligibility cap will be eligible, including home-based businesses and sole proprietors, with the exception of certain prohibited businesses as documented in the specifications. Businesses that were approved for grant funding under Phases 1 through 3 will be eligible to apply and receive Phase 4 funding. Phases 1, 2, 3 funding won't affect the award sizes of the businesses, except to the extent that those prior awards reduce the business's unmet need to below the grant amount the business would otherwise be eligible for. Businesses that applied for Phases 1 through 3 will need to reapply and submit all required documentation regardless of their prior application. We are instituting in the Phase 4 application, we're going to open that application 2 days earlier for businesses in any category that were not approved for Phase 3 funding. This would include businesses that didn't apply for Phase 3 funding. So no approval, no application. They'll be able to apply 2 days early. The award sizes for Phase 4 are going to be standard across all buckets of funding, which is a little different from Phase 3, but that raises the amount for micros and small businesses. Any business with five or fewer FTEs, their maximum award size will be $10,000 in the Phase 4 program. 6 to 25 full-time equivalent employees will be 15, and 26 to 50 full-time employees will be a maximum award amount of $20,000. Again, similar to Phase 3, we're going to use WR30 information from the Department of Labor to determine FTE size, and we will be looking at for the size of the award, we'll be looking at the applicant's highest full-time equivalent count of the past 8 quarters, from the first quarter 2019 through fourth quarter 2020. That'll enable a business to receive an award corresponding to their peak headcount as opposed to their current headcount, which may reflect some substantial declines due to losses in revenue or restrictions during the COVID-19 pandemic. For eligibility, the fourth quarter WR30 from 2020 or third quarter 2020, whichever is the most recently filed, will be reviewed. And if the most recently filed WR30 count is less than the eligibility threshold, the business will be eligible and receive a grant award based on the largest FTE band. Similar to Phases 1 through 3, because WR30 filings are based on employer identification numbers, entities with more than one EIN will be able to submit one application per EIN. The funding categories for this $85 million are outlined in your memo, starting with restaurants at $35 million of the funding, with 33% of that being reserved for entities that have commercial business address located fully or partially in a census tract that was eligible to be selected as a New Jersey Opportunity Zone. And that will follow through each of the buckets. Child care providers, the allocation is $10 million, again, with the 33% set aside for Opportunity Zone. Microbusinesses, $25 million of the funding, and other small businesses, $15 million of the funding, both of those, again, with the 33% for the Opportunity Zone. Eligibility verification process, consistent with all three of the former phases of the program, we're recommending that in addition to the prior stated eligibility parameters, the applicant must satisfy taxation's requirement to ensure that the SME does not have tax debts due to the state and must certify that it does not owe any taxes subject to repayment if the certification is not correct. The applicant will be required to complete a simplified debarment legal questionnaire, and disqualification issues will be reviewed under existing delegated authority. To be eligible for the grant funding, the applicant must also be in good standing with the New Jersey Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the New Jersey Department of Human Services, if regulated by DHS, the Department of Children and Families, if regulated by DCF, and the New Jersey Division of Alcohol and Beverage Control, if regulated by ABC, at the time the application as determined in the sole discretion of Labor and Workforce Development, Department of Human Services, Department of Children and Families, and Alcohol and Beverage Control. We will, again, be asking that the business's chief executive officer or equivalent to self-certify that the organization was in operation on February 15th, 2020. This is consistent with the Federal Paycheck Protection Program, that they'll make a best effort not to furlough or lay off any individuals from the time of the application through 6 months after the end of the declared state of emergency, that they have been negatively impacted by the COVID-19 declared state of emergency, and that they have a material financial need that cannot be overcome without the grant of emergency relief funds. To comply with CARES Act, including ensuring an unmet need for the funds arising from business interruption, applicants must acknowledge and agree that the funds must be used to replace revenue lost as a result of business interruption caused by COVID-19 between March 1st, 2020 and the date of the grant agreement. The grant amount for the applicant is greater than the unmet need. The amount will be determined in $500 increments, not to exceed the amount of need. Applicants with an unmet need between $500 and $1,000, the minimum grant award shall be $1,000. No grant award will be approved if the unmet need is less than $500. To comply with duplication of benefits positions within the Stafford Act, all applicants will be required to fill out an affidavit identifying all other funding sources related to COVID-19. And answer questions about whether their business was essential, whether the business was able to remain open, and what capacity and estimated revenue decline they have. Efforts will be made to ensure that all potential grant applicants whose primary language is not English, but is one of 11 languages that are prevalent in New Jersey, will have resources or information available to help them understand and potentially access the grant funding. Again, similar to phase three, the authority will use automation and interactivity so that businesses are immediately alerted if they enter information that may indicate ineligibility or trigger a manual review, giving them the opportunity to confirm that their responses are correct or choose not to proceed. And in expectation that the new phase will be oversubscribed with the current amount of $85 million, NJED staff and outside services hired for application review will process the applications on a first-come, first-served basis. Businesses whose applications are denied will have the right to appeal and will be given an appeal time frame that is set in the declination letter of at least 3 days, but no longer than 10 days. And finally, as each amount received has been dedicated to a specific phase or subset of applications within a phase, a possibility exists that in certain instances some funds may remain after all relevant applications have been processed. In such an instance, staff is requesting delegated authority to the CEO to amend the MOU with NJ Treasury to state the final actual amount of the CRF funds, to reallocate funds to or from other CRF-funded programs, and or return to Treasury the remaining amounts after all eligible applications have been funded or as otherwise required by law or the MOU with NJ Treasury. As similar to all other phases of this application, and due to financial hardship, the authority is collecting no fees from the applicant for this program. Attached are the product specifications for your review, which further describe program details and minimum eligibility requirements that the applicants must meet to be considered for Phase 4. And the summary of approvals from the beginning of the memo are listed below as the recommendation. And I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Patience, for the comprehensive review. Let's get a motion first. Do I have a motion to approve?
Do we have to ask questions before we have questions answers before we approve it? If we have questions before we vote to approve or abstain or
questions,
whatever?
The questions would be before the vote. It can be done before the motion or after the motion and second.
Okay. All right.
Charles, it's Fred. I'll make the motion to approve.
Thank you, Fred.
Kathy Brennan, I'll second, but I do have a question.
Thank you, Kathy. Okay, so we have a first and we have a second on the motion. Now time for any questions or discussions.
Okay, Kathy, I don't know if you want to go first or I can go.
I have
several questions. Okay, all right. I guess one of my questions, because there was a lot to unpack there, because I know it's a lot of information, and I think you guys have done a great job in pulling all this together and, you know, from lessons learned, making the necessary adjustments. One of the questions I have actually is a result of hearing from several microbusinesses. And this is regarding unemployment, that if they were 1099 and microbusiness owners, they were able to collect unemployment. How is that coordinated or not coordinated, or is that going to be a problem? Because I had a couple of people say that they actually got a letter or maybe have to give money back from unemployment because they got money from one of these other programs. So how does, I'm sorry, there's a lot of background noise. How does that work? How is that working? Is there somebody on the board that can provide some clarification on that, especially if we're moving now to up to $10,000 grant for micro business owners? And I know that unemployment has been extended. So how is that coordinated? Is it being coordinated? How is that working? Do they have something to worry about? And that's probably a bigger question. I'm not sure.
Hi, Rosemary. I don't think a repayment of unemployment is specific to our program. So I'm not sure that I can answer that specific question, but I can certainly note it, and we can follow up with you on that.
Okay, they just need to know if they've got unemployment dollars, and then they also received, let's say, PPP, and I'm just using PPP, or the Phase 3 grant. If they're using one for operations, the other for payroll, I'm not sure how that's working for folks, but a couple people are a little concerned because I guess there's some letters that are coming out from unemployment asking for verification or validation or something. So,
okay. I think the question, Bruce, of patients is if an individual is also a microbusiness or a sole prop, is that part of the DOB the duplication of benefits analysis as if akin to PPP? I think that's the question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that.
Okay. We can follow up on that.
And, okay. Thanks. And then the other one is a clarification. I know it says not owe taxes, is it not owed taxes, or is if there if somebody's in a payment plan for taxes owed, are they eligible, or is that if they owe, period, they're not eligible?
So I think, Rosemary, that's a Treasury and taxation question, but for the most part, I think that there are levels there. So I think that'll be handled on a case-by-case basis. So if there is an applicant that comes back as having owed dollars to taxation, but they're in good standing with taxation, that's going to be one thing. Not being in good standing with taxation would be another.
Gotcha. Thank you. And you mentioned NAICS codes are not going to be reviewed for certain buckets, or they are going to be reviewed for certain buckets?
The NAICS codes are not relevant to specific eligibility outside of which funding bucket a restaurant or a child care provider would fall into.
Okay. And then the last question that I have is regarding the material needs. Is this a narrative, or are they going to have a selection of boxes to check?
Or are you asking them to? We ask them to tell us what their unmet need is. So, for example, an applicant fills out the pre-registration application and lists that they've received other COVID impact funding. Maybe it's PPP, maybe it's an EIDL grant or loan, maybe it's county funding. Then we ask them, considering the other funding that you've received, do you still have an unmet need, and what is that number?
Okay, so it is a narrative.
It is a narrative.
And so that leads it to interpretation. I'm just wondering if it may be, if there, I don't know if it's too late, but if there's a possibility to provide people with the ability to check a box or narrative so that folks that may not be not be able to express themselves in a way that adequately identifies what the need is, maybe at
the narrative,
someone that's a little bit more eloquent.
I completely understand what you're saying, yes. So the narrative is very short and to the point. It is, after this funding, do you still have a need, yes or no? If you say no, we're going to trigger a warning that says, you're saying you have no unmet need, which would make you ineligible for this grant. Would you like to revise that answer? If they say yes, and they put in a number that is, let's say, $499, we're going to put up a warning to them that says, you're listing an unmet need of $499 or less, and I'm not going to get the words exactly right here.
Right.
That's going to make you ineligible for the grant. Would you like to revise your answer? So we're giving them, some guidance without telling them specifically what to put, because they do need to tell us what that unmet need is.
So there are prompts there, but so once I get past that threshold of no, or the threshold is above the $500, I say that I need $5,000, then the next that's when I get into the narrative as to what I'm going to use the $5,000 for. Is that what
those
you're
questions
saying?
Those questions are asked separately in the in the application process. Yes.
Okay. So the narrative.
We talked about narrative. I don't want you to think that someone has to write in and someone's going to be reading it and interpreting it. Everything is either a yes, no, or a selection of options that are like check boxes. Okay. I'm going to use this for utilities or rent, so forth and so on. So,
gotcha.
So that we not open for interpretation and everyone.
Okay. Okay. And then my last question is the delegation. I know there's a lot there. Is that pretty much the same from previous phases, or did we make a substantive change in delegation authority that we're also voting on as part of this?
No substantive changes in delegated authority, although we are calling out specifically by title those that mm-hmm. can perform the specific delegations.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I do have one last question. When you say, I know it's first come, first serve, but if somebody, if it's kicked out or flagged for review, is that money set aside until the determination is made to say yes or no that they're eligible?
Yes.
Does that, okay, great. All right, those are my questions. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Aisha. Kathy, you had some questions?
Yeah, I don't really have a question. I just have a comment for clarification just so that those who in the public who might be listening or board members who were not part of the committee process for this for these, could EDA staff just clarify how, since those who are eligible for first round of funding or second round of funding are eligible for this new round of funding, can you just talk a little bit about the how those who were rejected in the first round will be treated? Those who were rejected because they had difficulty navigating the process, just so that those who have already received funding don't sort of have an advantage in applying the second time around over those who were not successful mm-hmm. the first time.
Thanks. Sure. Happy to do that.
Patience. Before you do that, just there's one comment again for the we did talk about this committee. I don't know if Kathy knows this, but for the public, in phase two and phase three, so that's the summer and basically the fall rounds, due to the significant funding that Governor Murphy and Liz and Kathy and the team at Treasury made available to the programs, we didn't have to decline anyone for lack of funding. There are folks who were declined for lack of eligibility or lack of having their paperwork together in the right way, which is exactly what Patience is going to talk about in a minute. But we did not decline anyone. We have not, it's been since last spring, we have not had to decline anyone for lack of funding available to meet the needs. But Patience,
right.
talk through the prioritization
thanks,
process here.
Sure. So the way that the application process will work for this Phase 4 grant is we will start with a pre-registration time period that is not first come, first serve. Open to anybody, and we've extended the time on that in order to allow applicants who maybe haven't applied before or have struggled through the application a lot of time to take their time and get that information in. When the actual application opens, it will open first for anyone who was not approved for Phase 3 funding. So Phase 3, like I said earlier, going through the memo, was our largest grant program and our largest amount of funding out there. Anyone who didn't get approved for that, and that could have, and that would include anyone who didn't apply, couldn't get into the application for whatever reason, missed the deadline, were declined, whatever that is. If they were not approved, they're going to have first access to this new application, and that's across all buckets. So restaurants, childcare, small and micro businesses, any of those organizations that did not get approved for Phase 3 funding will have first access to the application. The application will be open for 2 days for them in advance of opening for the first two buckets, which we're doing together, which are childcare and restaurants. Did that clarify it for you?
Yeah, I just wanted that to be publicly stated since prior applicants who received funds, are still going to be eligible under this new round, and then there may be some people who are still looking for assistance, and I just wanted that to be on the record. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank
that
you.
That was helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Any other board members have any further questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, we have a motion and a second in favor. I'd like to ask the board members to vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, any recusals or abstentions? Okay. Hearing none, motion passes. I'd like to move on with the agenda. Next is a report from the Policy Committee. Our chairman, Mr. Kevin Quinn, is unfortunately not with us today, but he also chairs the policy committee, and he prepared a statement for me to read on his behalf, which I'll read right now. As the chair of the policy committee, I can share that the next several agenda items under authority matters and economic growth are meaningful initiatives. I am continuously amazed by the forward progress and momentum that the NJEDA staff push forward on a regular basis. Today, staff will present recommendations on needed contract amendments to support IT needs, as well as the New Jersey Council on the Green Economy, enhancement for the 21st Redevelopment Program, as well as important MOUs to support the New Jersey wind-related initiatives. With that report from the chair of the policy committee, I'd like to now move on to the authority matters. First one is going to be presented by Mr. Tom Murphy. The item is gap funding to support Microsoft portal application development request. And it's to approve a new contract funding to support continued Microsoft portals application development while a new RFP for services is publicly bid. Tom?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman, and good morning, all board members. Yes, I'm here to ask for gap funding to support the Microsoft portals application development while a RFQ is issued for Microsoft support services. I would just like to make it clear that as of March 2020, the contract vendor here was indeed set to complete all work on this contract as of November 2020. With the funding that they had in place. It was, I think, back in October that we had come and asked for additional funding to support COVID, ongoing COVID applications for specifically some of the grant programs that were being put through this portal. Just as a general number, the EDA over the past 10 years has done, around 500 to 1,000 applications per year, which jumped to 60,000 applications processed during the 2020 year. This new portal solution that we put in place with was because of that, our infrastructure was not built, at least the application part of it was not built to handle that volume. So we did use Microsoft portals, which fortunately we had already moved our old legacy LMS system that tracks all the financial and project information to Microsoft Cloud Dynamics CRM, and portals dovetails perfectly into that system, and the portals technology actually creates the application within the Dynamics CRM environment. In addition to that, we were asking for a max not to exceed of $1,725,000 of gap funding in order to cover some specific areas. $250,000 of that would be to complete the Project Enable that kind of got put on hold back in March. 200 specifically around COVID applications, Grant 4 and others, $325,000 of which would be used for building out the portal interface. In our rush to do all of this massive work, we do have a lot of cleanup to do, and part of that would be deduplication and reworking some of the entities that were built out during each of these phases. In addition to that, there's 250 that is needed for just 14 new programs that are already approved, plus another 700 as related to the governor's economic plan that the EDA is responsible for. And there were 29 new programs that we are going to be launching, 30 as of, I think I found out earlier this week, 30 new programs that we will be able to utilize the new portals technology. However, a lot of those do have to start and get underway while we complete the RFQ. We do plan to do all of this funding with specific task orders with CRO, and when the RFQ is awarded, for Microsoft services, support services, any and all work would stop on that. anything that's open and active on this. So this is not just a full payout to Crow on this. This is until award of that RFQ. But this will keep us working in portals throughout the entire time. I heard several of the programs already mentioned. DIP program is done in portals. The Emerge program will be presented in portals too. So while we are building out our internal IT staff doing this RFQ, we are asking for this funding with Crow in order to continue to put out these applications through this portals technology. And I think that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Can I get a motion to approve by the board members?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Robert Angelo, second.
Thank you, Jenny. Robert, any discussion or comments by the board members? Okay. Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Next matter on the agenda is the 21st Century Redevelopment Program, Modifications and Application Reopening. This is a request to approve the utilization of $500,000 through an appropriation under the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act to additionally fund the 21st Century Redevelopment Program and approve to reopen the application for a period of 45 days following a public notice of funding availability. To present this matter, we have with us Mr. Pat Rose, the Director of Marketing and Product Development. Pat?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman, and good morning, everyone. So this item involves the 21st Century Redevelopment Program, which is a competitive program where the EDA will provide grants to municipalities to plan for solutions for the reuse of large office or retail properties, such as shopping malls and large office complexes. At one time, these properties were economic drivers for local communities, but have increasingly become vacant or underutilized as a result of changing economic and consumer trends. Just a bit of context. The program was initially approved by the members in October of 2018, later modified in April of 2019, after which the EDA opened an application round with a deadline of April 9th, 2020. As we all know, Governor Murphy declared a public health emergency on March 9th, 2020, in response to COVID-19, which was about a month before the application deadline for this program. Given the abrupt change to a remote working environment, several potential applicants contacted EDA and requested an extension to the application deadline for this program. In response to those concerns, the members last April approved delegated authority for staff to reopen the application round for this program based on when staff determined that normal business operations had resumed. Here we are today, a full year later from that board action, and still not in a situation that many would consider normal business operations. Authority staff and businesses across the state remain in a remote working environment. So in discussions with DAGs, the recommendation was to not utilize the delegated authority granted to staff last April, but instead to request the board's approval at this time to reopen the application. So part of this request is approval to reopen the application as soon as possible, which is expected to be no earlier than May 8, 2021, which is following a notice of funding that will be published in the New Jersey Register. Once the application round is reopened, the EDA will accept applications for a period of 45 days. Just so the members know, 6 applications were in fact received by the original application deadline. Those applicants will be contacted and given the opportunity to either withdraw their application and submit a new application under the reopened round, or may keep their existing application on file. Given that it's been about a full year since we received those applications, we will reach back out to the applicants and ask them to confirm that the information in their application is still accurate and that they can still meet the requirements of the program, particularly the requirement to match 20% of the EDA grant amount should they wish to keep their application on file. The other part of this request is to add additional funding to the program to enable EDA to provide more grants under the program. So the program approved by the members in April 2019 budgeted $250,000 from the Economic Recovery Fund, ERF,
which would have allowed for up to five grants at $50,000 each. The recently enacted Economic Recovery Act appropriates funding to the authority to be used for economic development plans for distressed assets in municipalities. So the second piece of this request is to utilize $500,000 of that appropriation under the Economic Recovery Act to supplement the 21st Century Program, which would increase the total program pool from $250,000 to $750,000, allowing the EDA to provide up to 15 grants at $50,000 each. Finally, I'll just end by clarifying that other than reopening the application round and adding this additional funding, the program is not changing in any way from what the members have already approved in August 2019. The existing program remains viable, and the EDA already has a number of applications under the existing program, which also may remain viable. The product specs for the 21st Century Program, as approved in August 2019, are attached for your reference. That's a refresher on how the program works, but I'll be happy to answer any questions there may be.
Thanks, Pat. It's Tim. Can I just jump in with 10 seconds of additional commentary? This was and Charles, I remember one of the very first conversations you and I ever had the first time we met was about this opportunity to reposition suburban and retail assets into 21st century economic drivers. It was a really good idea pre-pandemic. It's an even better idea and more important idea as we emerge from the pandemic, because anyone who tells you with great certainty that they know what the future of work is going to look like, you should probably raise your eyebrow and greet that with some skepticism. But the opportunity, there's surely going to be opportunities that did not exist 18 months ago for malls, retail spaces, suburban office parks to play a different role than they maybe were going to likely be playing pre-pandemic, as folks think about their office footprint in a very different kind of way. So we think, again, this is the timing is right here. And so we hope we can have the board's support to continue to make progress here.
Thank you, Tim. And as Pat was going through the memorandum, I do recall that meeting and our very specific discussion on this topic. So it's glad to see it not only coming back around, but, being enhanced and given the opportunity to the business community to submit applications to take advantage of the monies that the EDA has set aside here. So with that, let me take a motion on this matter.
This is Rob Angel. I have some questions about this. Should we do that after the motion or before?
We'll be consistent, and we'll do it after the motion.
Okay. Charles, it's Fred. I'll make the motion with questions, too.
Okay. Thank you, Fred.
It's Marcia. I'll second.
Thank you. Okay. We have a first and we have a second, and we have questions. Robert, was that you first?
Yeah, so we're, sorry, I got distracted from it. We're talking about the technology business tax modification, correct?
Nope, 21st century grants for planning for stranded assets. I think we're doing NOL in a few minutes.
I got ahead of myself. Sorry. I have no questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. That was easy.
I have a feeling
Fred, I thought Fred's question might be harder than that one, though. Let's see.
Go ahead, Fred. You're on.
Yeah, I want to see, are we opening up this program to municipalities, too, that want to market some of their closed properties?
Great question.
So the eligible uses of the grant are fairly broad, and one potential use could be the municipality could catalog and prepare materials to market potential facilities. The grant, and you'll see in the product specs some of the eligible uses, it's intentionally broad and flexible in that it should accommodate a number of potential approaches to reusing or repurposing these properties.
So Pat, just to clarify, towns can apply themselves here.
In fact, only towns can apply. I mean, it's not open to entities. It's open to municipalities or, I believe, county economic development organizations.
That's great. I think that's the component that's needed here, and I appreciate that.
Thanks, Fred.
Okay. Thank you, Fred. Any other board members have any questions for Pat or Tim?
Yes, this is Rachel. Just as a point of clarification, you said that this only municipalities can apply. and then they're using those funds, they can use those funds to secure developers or people to purchase the empty buildings, or I'm a little confused.
So I would say I'll take that.
It's okay. This is planning grant money. So, and as Pat said, Rosemary, there's a pretty broad use of what a municipality or a county could do with this. But this is, you know, imagine a, you know, it's not that hard to imagine, unfortunately, a vacant or mm-hmm. a, you know, becoming vacant mall, and, you know,
right.
Town X wants to have a plan for what to do with it rather than just sort of watching it wither and, you know, whatever. And so that could be a zoning discussion of, well, should we let some housing get built in there? Should we let some, you know, grocery store uses in addition to, you know, traditional retail? Should we build some open space? Those kinds of questions. So providing some resources for towns and counties potentially to do some studies of what else could this be besides what it is now, to do some marketing for those sites as you described, you know, finding a developer, finding a different user, finding someone who wants to come in and spruce the place up. I think those are, I think, the likeliest uses, although there is a broad town can propose, you know, a pretty broad use of the funds, but it's planning money.
Gotcha. Okay, that answers my question. That answers my question. I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Rosemary.
Thanks, Rosemary. Any other board members have any questions? Okay. Hearing none, we have a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay, moving along, the next item on the agenda is a Memorandum of Understanding with the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities governing a $13.2 million funding commitment by the NJBPU towards the New Jersey Windport. This request is to approve a Memorandum of Understanding between the Authority and the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities that commits the BPU to provide $13.2 million in funding to support the development of the New Jersey Wind Port Initiative, which is a very important project for the state. With us this morning, we have Jonathan Kennedy, the Director, Sector Lead of Infrastructure Economic Transportation, to present this matter to the board. Jonathan?
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Chair. Members are requested to approve a Memorandum of Understanding between the Authority and the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. The MOU, which was approved by the BPU's board late last month, commits the BPU to providing $13.2 million in funding to support phase one of the New Jersey Windport. BPU's funding commitment recognizes the role that the port will play in helping to catalyze the state's offshore wind industry and, by extension, further the state's goal of 100% clean energy by 2050. Funds will be derived from the societal benefits charge, which the BPU overseas. The MOU sets out certain conditions governing the use of funds, such as the pre-construction and construction activities that funds can be used for, the reporting requirements once funds have been spent by the authority, and the requirements if funds are not spent by the time of the project completion. Once approved, the MOU shall continue for a period of 5 years. In summary, members are requested to approve a Memorandum of Understanding between the authority and NJBPU, which commits BPU to providing $13.2 million in funding to the Windport project. I have to take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan.
I just want to note, it's Tim, sorry, Charles, deep appreciation for President Fiorilliso and the team at BPU. I think the three agencies that work together most often on wind, with Rob and the team at Labor as well, but BPU, DEP under Sean's leadership, previously under Catherine's, and our team, you know, work extraordinarily well, and the sort of mutual support among everyone to get offshore wind and the wind port and everything else that's related to the clean energy agenda done is it's been an extraordinary partnership, and I just want to express our appreciation to Joe and the team over at BPU.
Great. Thanks, Tim, for the acknowledgement of the sister agencies and authorities. I'd like to ask for a motion to approve.
Shimko, approve.
Thank you, Commissioner. Second. I got a second.
Second, Fred Dumont.
Thank you, Fred. Okay, is there any discussion or questions? Okay, hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions?
Elizabeth Dragon from DEP. We're abstaining.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
And just for the record, I assume this is for the same reason as before, because of DEP's role in permits for the port project, correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. Okay, motion passes. Next item, we're going to stay with Jonathan Kennedy to present. The item is a Memorandum of Understanding with the South Jersey Port Corporation governing a joint feasibility study and a request for $150,000 in funding to support the study. It's to approve an MOU between the authority and the South Jersey Port Corporation for a feasibility study on the potential expansion of the Port of Salem to accommodate offshore wind supply chain activities in support of the New Jersey wind port and a funding contribution towards the study. Jonathan?
Thank you very much. Members are requested to approve a Memorandum of Understanding between the Authority and the South Jersey Port Corporation. The MOU, which was approved by SJPC's board late last month, commits both parties to jointly developing a feasibility study on the potential expansion of the Port of Salem to accommodate offshore wind supply chain activities and commits the Authority to a not-to-exceed funding contribution towards the study of $150,000. The Port of Salem is an existing shallow draft port on the Salem River, approximately 28 acres in size and approximately 10 miles northeast as the crow flies of the proposed wind port in Lower Alloways Creek. The feasibility study will explore which wind and other industrial activities could feasibly be located at the Port of Salem. Recognizing that the Port of Salem presents a very different value proposition to the wind industry vis-a-vis the wind port, any activities that would be considered for the study would be complementary to the wind port Lower Alloways Creek rather than in competition with. Examples include manufacturing of secondary components, activities which are not envisaged for the wind port at Lower Alloways Creek. We expect that the feasibility study will be completed by the end of the calendar year, and the MOU will be in effect for a period of 2 years. In summary, members are requested to approve an MOU between the Authority and SJPC, which commits the Authority to co-developing a study and commits the Authority to contributing up to $150,000 towards said study.
Thank you, Jonathan. Do I have a motion to approve by the board members?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Do I have a second?
Brennan.
Thank you, Kathy. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay. The next matter on the agenda is the amendment to contract with Coalition for Green Capital for consulting services. The request is to approve an expansion of the authority's existing contract with the Coalition for Green Capital to provide consulting services to the newly established New Jersey Council on the Green Economy for work defined in Governor Murphy's Executive Order number 221. With us, we have our EDA's Director of Clean Energy Sector Lead, Pallavi.
Thank you. Members of the board are asked to approve an expansion of the authority's existing contract with CGC to provide consulting services to the newly established New Jersey Council on the Green Economy for work defined in Governor Murphy's Executive Order Number 221, which includes conducting a green economy analysis, gathering stakeholder input, and delivering an advisory report to the governor for a firm fixed price of $680,000. The staff proposes the expansion of the existing contract the New Jersey Economic Development Authority has with CGC. The original contract was signed on December 8, 2020, and requires CGC to provide consulting services to the authority to support the design and implementation of a statewide green financing mechanism, or the Green Fund. By way of background, Governor Murphy's Executive Order 221 established both the Office of Climate Action and the Green Economy, as well as the New Jersey Council on the Green Economy within the Climate Office. The Council's role is to develop a blueprint to expand the green economy and help build a diverse workforce to support the administration's clean energy and climate goals. We are asking for an expansion of the existing contract, as there is an alignment between the original scope of work and the proposed contract amendment. While the primary objective of the fund, the Green Fund, is to assist in the mobilization of private capital to finance the deployment of commercially proven clean energy technologies by the state's business, it is now clear that the efforts of the Green Fund will need to be aligned with the policy direction of the Council on the Green Economy and the Climate Office. While the existing contract for the authority concerns building a financial fund, the work performed and understanding developed from that work will give the Coalition for Green Capital the ability to deliver on the additional scope of work with significant cost savings and informational synergies for the authority and the state.
Thank you very much. Okay, can I get a motion to approve this matter?
This is Elizabeth Dragon from DEP. Motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Do I have a second?
Second, Board Member Wilson.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Rob Angel. I have a question.
Sure, Commissioner.
Just curious, is there any conflict or recusal necessary for them if they're also bidding or looking to approve them for the next item on the agenda? They're doing work for us on putting this forward and also bidding and about to win a contract for bringing our financing mechanism forward.
Gabrielle?
Sorry, can you repeat that? I didn't hear the...
We're approving a contract modification for this entity, Coalition for Green Capital, on
yes.
That item. And then the next item, we're approving them winning a competitive bid on bringing forward a financing mechanism. Is there any conflict or anything like that between these two items for the same entity?
The next item meaning the NOL program? I'm sorry, I'm not...
I think Rob, the memo might be confusing. They were approved for the green financing exercise. This is an expansion of that approval, essentially.
There was a prior competitive RFP. They were selected, and this is extending the contract under that prior.
The old
RFP.
Memo is just contained here. My bad.
Yep.
I'll get a
question right. I promise.
Thanks, Commissioner. Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Is there any other questions or comments?
Yeah, I have a quick question. This is Rosemarie. So if they were just approved for the previous contract at the last board meeting, and now we're doing a modification a month later?
It wasn't at the last board meeting. I'm looking, or Pallavi, do you remember when it was?
Yes.
It was the November 27 board meeting.
Are you still looking?
Yeah, it was November 2020.
November.
So in November 2020, we approved it, and now in April 2021, we're doing a modification.
Yeah.
We're expanding the scope of...
Yes, to support, I got it again. Subsequent to that November approval, the governor, by executive order, created this Green Council and this working group in the office within the governor's office, and this is expanding to support that. That's the new, that's why it's changed. We have a new group we're helping to support.
Okay, so I guess I would then, I think it was Fred, I guess I would echo, so why wouldn't that be sent back out for bid or what? I'm just, concerned that if we're approving and then we turn around and we do an expansion, that is this just a way to sort of tier dollars to a particular vendor. And I know it's not intentional. I'm just wondering if that may end up being the case, that, you know, expansion does not require a competitive bid. It's just we are expanding the scope, and we've identified the person. So we've gone from, let's say, I don't know, $1,000 to $5,000 in a matter of several months. And I know that we do have expansion of scopes that come through, not frequently, but on a regular basis. Just something for consideration as to how that ends up looking in what we're doing in terms of putting something out for bid if it is a big enough expansion or a large enough dollar amount. Yes, food
Rosemary,
for thought.
This is, yeah, and Rosemary, this is Chris Baker, and you are correct that when you have a publicly advertised procurement, there are constraints, but the way that this was bid out is it did anticipate the possibility of additional work, so we took advantage of the additional work clause in the original RFP.
One of the considerations is how related the scope of this extension is, so that it isn't a completely new and separate activity. It is tied to what they were doing before for EDA.
Okay, but if we anticipated an expansion, was that part of what was presented to the board and approved that there's a possibility of expansion, that those dollars amount could jump by more than X percent?
No, the executive order hadn't been issued yet, and that's why it's being presented today.
All right, thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, we have a motion, we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions?
Aisha Glover, I'm going to recuse. I sit on the council.
Thanks, Alicia. Okay, motion passes. Moving into the economic growth portion of our agenda. Next item is technology business tax certificate transfer, NOL program, 2021 program, COVID-19 modification, notice of rule modification. Request is to approve a modification of the rules pursuant to the Executive Order 103, Governor Murphy, 2020. For the Technology Business Tax Certificate Transfer NOL program, revising the requirement for a full-time employee to work 80% of his or her time in New Jersey to reflect Executive Order EO 107, Governor Murphy 2020. We have Mr. Matthew Fields, EDA's Program Manager for Economic Growth Products, to present this matter to the board. Matthew.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman, and good morning to everyone. As stated, the members are requested to approve a modification of the rules of the 2021 program NOL year. A modification is necessary to reflect the governor's EO 103 declaring a public health emergency and EO 107 requiring employees to shelter at home to contain the spread of the virus. Per the program legislation, an employee must satisfy two definitions of full-time employee. One is just being a full-time employee, and additionally, they must meet the definition of, quote, full-time employee working in the state, which is defined as a full-time employee whose primary office is in New Jersey and who spends at least 80% of his or her time in New Jersey. Historically, when reviewing program applications, authority staff have only counted those employees who can demonstrate evidence of meeting the requirement of spending 80% of his or her time in New Jersey. Pennsylvania residents have never been counted due to the PA-New Jersey Reciprocal Income Tax Agreement. With many businesses still having COVID work-from-home measures in place for the 2021 program year, staff is recommending a policy to count any non-PA out-of-state employees by demonstrating either past evidence that the employee commuted to a New Jersey workplace and that the employee resides in the same location or reports to the same office, or through evidence that the employee lives within a reasonable proximity of New Jersey as defined by a 90-minute commutable distance to their assigned New Jersey office. The The attached rule modification is on the next page, and staff recommends accepting this modification, and it would be in place through the 2021 program year, which is the later of April 15, 2022, or the 2021 New Jersey state tax filing date. Please note this requested change is being presented to the authorities board prior to the program application deadline, which is June 30, 2021, in order to provide notice of the change to all participants prior to the program application deadline. And also this request mirrors the request that was made for the 2020 program year. And with that, I'll open up for any questions.
Thank you, Matthew. Before we get to any questions, is there a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move this.
Jenny, second.
Caridi will second.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah, this is Rob Angelo. I got it right this time. In this, I'm concerned about the way we talk about the, in the memo, it refers to Executive Order 107. In the second paragraph of the modification document, it says EO 103, and then the language that's being changed just broadly says comply with any restrictions ordered by the governor. So I don't know what, why there's differences in all three instances.
So I think I can answer that question. The EO 103 is the order that allows, under the state of emergency, the modification of rules. So that underlines the authority to do this. EO 107 was the initial order to essentially stay at home. So it's reflecting those measures, but there have been a number of changes to that initial EO and the requirements in there. So that's why the memo talks about the executive orders in general because of all of those subsequent measures. But this is really more focused on the office workers and their ability or possibility of being there or not at their offices.
Okay, and then a practical question. Does this exemption change when the public health emergency is over?
Well, this would go through the 2021 year. We have to count employees two times, once at program application and then again at closing. So that's why we would extend through the 2021 program year. That's what our recommendation is for.
So unlike other programs...
And Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, we take applications in June, so
yeah.
whatever we
correct.
Do
it's
shortly,
coming up.
There needs to apply.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is on an annual cycle. It's not a rolling application, so applications have to be in by June 30th, get reviewed based on their status on June 30th, and then there's essentially a check at closing when they get their funding. So it's really for this year's cycle, with the assumption that next year... things will be better, and then we can, EBA staff can reassess. This was done last year with the same idea. It was done as a one-year cycle, and then staff reassessed for this year.
Great. Okay, thank you.
This is Rosemarie. Do we do a audit, or what's the baseline to validate or verify that their folks are within that 90-minute commute? Is this a soft approval or verification, meaning that they check a box and saying, yes, the employees, 80% of our employees are within a 90-minute commute, or do we do a zip code audit or anything to validate?
We will actually take the employees home and Google Map if we're in question about anything, to how far it is from the actual office location.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, any other questions or comments by the board members? Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay, we're going to now move into a series of matters that's under the jurisdiction of the board, the board's loan review committee. Chair, board member, who is the chair of that committee, is Marcy Marley. Marcy, you have any comments you'd like to make with regard to your committee?
Yes. Thank you, Vice Chairman. The Drucker's Loan Review Committee evaluated and discussed a bond and two loan proposals at our April committee meeting that are now before the full board. The bond is for Linden Renewable Energy, LLC, and submitted for final approval to build an organic waste anaerobic digester facility to use food waste and other processed organic materials to produce renewable natural gas and commercial-grade digested solids. Under the Loan to Lender Program through the EDA's Community Development Financial Institutions Initiative, a loan was proposed and discussed for NYBDC LDC, which provides responsible financial products and business advisory services to small businesses that cannot obtain conventional financing, with a focus on minority, women-owned, and other underserved community businesses. The second loan proposal under the Premier Lending Program is to a subsidiary of Rising Tide Capital. Loan proceeds will be used for a portion of the permanent financing for the purchase of land, building, renovations, and soft costs to be used by Rising Tide and also provide affordable rental housing. Rising Tide Capital's mission is to assist struggling entrepreneurs in distressed and low-wealth communities through the development of strong businesses to help build and sustain these communities. In terms of the general program, by partnering with responsible CDFIs that share, and this is an important part, share EDA's mission, the EDA has the opportunity to amplify its impact. I want to thank the staff for their thorough presentation to the proposals, and Vice Chairman, I am pleased to move these items to the board for consideration.
Thank you, Marcy. Okay, first matter is this is the public hearing, final bond resolution. Project is the Linden Renewable Energy LLC, located in Linden City, Union County. Request is for proceeds for construction purchase equipment fund, to fund debt service, reserve fund, pay interest on the bonds during construction, and to cover the cost of issuance. With us this morning, we have the Managing Director and Underwriting of the EDA, Mr. David Lawyer. David?
Thank you. Linden Renewable Energy LLC, established in 2019, will be an organic waste anaerobic digester facility, which will use food waste and other processed organic material to produce renewable natural gas and commercial-grade digested solids, which is similar to peat moss and compost for use as a soil amendment. Linden is a wholly owned subsidiary of RNG Energy Solutions, who develops, finances, owns, and manages the operations of anaerobic digester projects that also produce renewable natural gas. The underwriter of the bond is Citigroup, and the issue will be tax-exempt, not to exceed a total value of $195 million. The proceeds will be used to finance the development of a new organic waste anaerobic digester facility in Linden, New Jersey. The bonds will be sold in denominations of $100,000 only to institutional or accredited investors, have a term not to exceed 30 years, and a fixed interest rate not to exceed 10%. This is a final approval request as the members provided preliminary approval at our January 2021 board meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Can I get a motion to approve?
Ginny Bauer, I'll move it.
Phil Rogers, second.
Thank you, Ginny. Thank you, Phil. Any questions or comments? Okay. Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Okay. Hearing none, motion passes. Throw this out there. Tim, this is a public hearing. How we have to open this up to the public, and how would we do that telephonically here? We do?
I believe that is encompassed by the public comment portion at the end of the meeting, or toward the end of the meeting.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Moving forward, we're going to move to the loan-to-lender program. Our first project is the NYBDC Local Development Corporation. The location is in Oakland, Bergen County, good old Bergen County. Proceeds to capitalize funding sources for loan programs. We have with us the Managing Director, Community Development and Small Business Services, Christine Fuentes. Christine?
Thanks. So this action item that I'm just going to kind of kick off, and then Matt Boyle will go into greater detail. So he will go into the financial review, actually. So this is related to the EDA's CDFI initiative that was approved back by board back in July of 2019. The Loan to Lenders program was created to provide community development financial institutions, or CDFIs, access to capital to then lend out to New Jersey-based businesses. EDA typically partners with CDFI since they are approved by the U.S. Department of Treasury and will have a history of community lending in which 60% of their lending activity is in low to moderate income areas. And this program provides CDFIs a loan for up to $1.5 million with favorable terms as dispersed in three tranches over a 20-year period. The repayments over a 20-year period. After funding is dispersed, quarterly reporting requirements will be enforced, so EDA can track lending activity as well. And this loan will allow EDA to partner with Pursuit Community Finance for the first time and grow their lending activity in New Jersey. They'll be providing a working capital loan product to New Jersey-based businesses. And now Matt Boyle will highlight the financial review.
Thank you, Christine. So the request is for a $1.5 million loan to NYBDC Local Development Corporation, doing business as Pursuit Community Finance under the Loan to Lender program. The NYBDC LDC is the CDFI affiliate of the New York Business Development Corporation and the 504 company. All three affiliates now operate with the same name, Pursuit Community Finance. Its mission is to help small businesses grow by providing small business loans and advisory services. The company has investments in Connecticut, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. The loan will have a 20-year term, one-third of the total principal to be advanced at closing, and the remaining amount to be dispersed as two additional tranches once 75% of the previous tranche is committed. Deployment period of the loan will be limited to 2 years post-closing. During the two-year loan deployment period, no interest or principal payments are due, followed by an interest-only period from years 3 through 7 at a fixed rate of 2%, followed by quarterly principal and interest payments from years 8 through 20 in an amount to fully amortize the outstanding principal balance. The interest rate during the amortization period will be fixed at 2%. A financial analysis of the applicant, as listed in the board memo, demonstrates strong operating performance and an ability to repay the loan. The loan collateral will be solely recourse only to NYBDC LDC. Payment will be reliant on the operating cash flow generated by the applicant, which is primarily contingent upon the performance of its loan portfolio. A condition of the loan is a reserve for loans funded by NJEDA based on historical loss rate of the portfolio plus 3% adjusted annually. Approval of a $1.5 million loan under the Loan to Lender program is recommended for this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Christine. Okay. Do I have a motion by the board?
Marcia Marley, I make a motion.
Thank you, Marcia. Second? Do I get a second?
I'll second Ginny Bell.
Ginny? Any questions or comments?
Sure. Aisha Glover, I just have a question and a comment. Definitely appreciate the pre-call with the staff, and I just want to emphasize that it does sound like there's an unmet need from the existing CDFI network in New Jersey. And so given the fact that Pursue doesn't have much of a track record here, we should just explore or require them to have a pretty aggressive marketing and outreach strategy, just so that way we make sure they are reaching micro and small businesses and just raising awareness of the opportunity. So if it is indeed likely that, you know, there is an unmet need, then we may just have to not set the bar higher for Pursuit, but ensure that they're getting the word out in the way that we need, so that way we can make sure that the funding is going to the businesses that we need it the most across the state that might not otherwise be aware of who Pursuit is.
Thank you, Alicia.
I just wanted to highlight that the marketing outreach is part of their quarterly reporting. We actually incorporated that, too, so we could be able to kind of track and see what they were doing, what type of events they're hosting, and, like, efforts around the marketing. And then this way we can see if there are gaps, and then we can assist with that, too, so we can track and monitor as well. So, yeah, I appreciate that for the comment.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Does any other board members have any questions or comments? I have a motion to approve. I mean, sorry, we already did motions. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions?
Aye.
Hearing none, motion passes. We'll move to the Premier Lender Program. We have Project 311 MLK Drive LLC in Jersey City, Hudson County. Proceeds for this matter is to purchase land, building, renovations, and soft costs. We have with us Mr. Michael Conti, Senior Real Estate and Credit Underwriter of the EDA. Michael?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. This request is for a 50% EDA participation amounting to $1.55 million. In a $3.1 million Valley National Bank loan under the Premier Lender Program. The proceeds of the loan plus equity of $1 million will allow the applicant to permanently finance the project, which involves the purchase and renovations to a vacant 23,000-square-foot four-story building in Jersey City, which will become the new headquarters for Rising Tide Capital, as well as 10 affordable apartment units. Rising Tide is a nonprofit corporation founded in 2004. They provide business development, planning, and management services through a variety of programs designed to help individuals start and grow small businesses. The applicant is 311 MLK Drive, and they are the owner of the building and a subsidiary of Rising Tide. In March of 2019, they acquired this property, funded by a $1.5 million loan from New Jersey Redevelopment Authority. Valley National Bank is providing a $1.6 million construction loan to complete the renovations to the commercial portion of the property, which will then be occupied by Rising Tide Capital. The proposed $3.1 million permanent financing will close upon the completion of the project expected in the third quarter of this year and will repay the balance of the construction loan as well as the New Jersey Redevelopment Authority loan. The credit analysis has determined that there is sufficient cash flow being generated by the business to support the required payments on the proposed loan. The risk rating on the loan has been downgraded due to historically fluctuating results, and a closing condition for our loan is satisfactory review of the CPA audited financial statements for the year ending 12/31/20, as presently we only have internally prepared statements. Normally, loan requests under this program are approved under delegated authority. The reason we are seeking approval from the board at this time is because the loan-to-value is 119%, which exceeds the normal standard maximum of 100%. We believe this level of increased risk is acceptable given the authority's mission to assist nonprofits in distressed communities, coupled with the fact that the applicant is contributing $1 million in equity towards the project cost, as well as the appraised value incorporating the reduced rents attributed to the 10 affordable apartments, with monthly rent for a two-bedroom unit priced at $1,250. I welcome any questions on this project.
Thank you, Michael. Do I have a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move.
Thank you, Jenny. Do I have a second? Board member.
Are you waiting for a second?
Yes, please.
Brennan.
Thank you, Kathy. Okay. Any questions or comments?
This is Robert Schimpf. I just got a question for the loan itself. Is prevailing wage kick in under this loan program for the construction?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Any board member?
This is Rosemary. That $1 million in equity, is that the equity? Is that the equity from the building itself? Or
No. The $1 million in equity, if you look at the project summary, the total cost of the project is $4.1 million. They are getting $3.1 million in a loan from Valley National Bank, which we would provide half of that funding. The remaining project costs, approximately $1 million, will be put in to the project by the applicant as equity.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, any other questions? Okay. Okay, good. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Here are none. Motion passes. We have one matter under the public petroleum underground storage tanks. This is summary of the DEP Petroleum USD Remediation Upgrade and Closure Fund, program project approved by the DEP. With us to present is the Managing Director of Underwriting, David Lawyer. David?
Thank you. This is a request for a $101,120 grant under NJDEP's Residential Underground Storage Tank Program. The proceeds will be used to remove a leaking underground storage tank and complete the required remediation at the applicant's primary residence. The vast majority of these applications are approved under delegate authority. However, since this request exceeds $100,000, board approval is required. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Do I have a motion? I get a motion.
This is Elizabeth Dragon from DEP. Make a motion.
Thank you.
Phil Lodge, second.
Thank you, Phil. Any questions or comments? Here are none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Here are none. Motion passes. Okay, we're now moving to the incentives portion of the agenda. We have one matter that comes under our incentives committee. We have our chair of the incentives committee with us, board member Virginia Bauer. Virginia, would you like to report out on your committee?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I'll make this brief. As we all know, one of the major responsibilities of EDA is to provide incentives, and on April 1st, we did meet, and as you mentioned, we are just focusing on one item, which is a UEZ energy sales tax exemption. So without further ado, I will forward it over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Virginia. So we do have the one matter, Salem County Urban Enterprise Zone Energy Sales Tax Exemption Program, new project approval. We have our Director of Incentives Relationship Management, Susan Greitz, with us. Susan?
Hi there. Good morning. I'll try to be quick about it. I know it's been a long morning already. I just want to kind of set the stage for what this is about. So we have an ongoing organization-wide effort to streamline our delegation, and really this is just the first step in that effort. Staff are reviewing each of the incentive programs at this time, and I'll be presenting memos like this in the future on our other programs as well. So the Salem County and Urban Enterprise Zone Energy Sales Tax Exemption Program has been around quite a long time. It's been in existence since 2004, first started by the Division of Commerce, Department of Commerce, rather, and was assigned to EDA in 2009. It provides an at-point-of-purchase sales tax exemption to Salem and UEZ manufacturers that employ at least 50 or 250 full-time employees, respectively, with at least 50% of whom are directly employed in the manufacturing process at the site. This provides, once these are approved, EDA turns around and recommends to taxation that they issue a sales tax exemption certificate that is provided to the energy providers directly. Energy in the sales tax world is natural gas and electricity. So this is a benefit that's different like others that we see, in that there's not a tax credit. It's literally exemption purchase, point of purchase certificate, so they don't have to pay the sales tax. It's not a terribly large program. Right now we have 16 active participants, but the benefits we estimate are about $4.6 million to those folks. The average sales tax savings per year is about $306,000 for these. So they are certainly a wide range of manufacturers. Size manufacturers that participate. Since 2018, EDA has been reorganized and expanded the Portfolio Management Compliance Division to really enhance our compliance and oversight of all of our incentive programs. And this one was not left out. We took a look and added some more substance to the job logs that we asked for, added the WR30 corroboration. We've always had sister agency checks in this program, always touching base with DCA and their UEZ team, as well as a Department of Labor. We generally have our business development folks go out and see the site, actually, at the beginning of the relationship. Many of these just continuously come back year to year for this exemption. It is an individual approval each year. We do review everything every single year, but we have understood in the way that we've processed these, and our delegations have recognized that once the board had been presented with a participant, generally the delegations have allowed staff to move forward each year without having to go back to board. If one of these entities perhaps doesn't come back quite as quickly to re-up for the next year and they have a lag in time, or there was a disruption in some of the UEZ statuses a few years back, sometimes we've seen some of the businesses that we've had long-term relationships come back and have to go back to board again because we've had a break in that time period. At this point, we've looked back at the delegations that exist in this program. One of them is to allow new applicants to come in and have staff review if it's just for under $100,000. All others have been brought to board. But we really feel this program is very transactional. It's not discretionary. There's no material factor or cost benefit review, for example. There's no categories of employees, full-time, new, retained, bonus considerations, any of those meaty things that we've seen in many of the other programs that you all consider. So we really feel that that maybe that review is just not one that rises to the level of board action. So we'd like first to eliminate that threshold on new approvals and be able to do them at the director level through delegated authority. The other ask in here is that the other existing delegations, and they're very minor, we have a delegation that allows us to terminate an award if we understand that the staffing numbers are no longer met, and a delegation to sign the approval letters for these. We'd like them both to be aligned to that level four director level so the director can manage these things and not require higher level signing power. So I think I pretty much went through it all. The only exception that I think is very important for us to still bring to board in this program, there is one feature that allows more than one entity to kind of collectively meet the job requirements. For example, if you have a manufacturer that works in concert with another entity that takes the widget from point A to point B and the neighbor takes it the next step of the way, this program would allow us to pool their employees to be able to meet the threshold and allow an overall exemption for that sales tax piece. I think that's a little more complex, and that makes sense to stay at board. But the request here is that we align the existing delegations we have to level four and eliminate that monetary threshold for new approvals. Of course, everything we do by delegation gets reported quarterly. So that's it. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Susan. Okay. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, happy to move this.
Jenny, can I get a second?
Wilton will second.
Thank you. Any questions or comments?
This is Rosemary. I just have a quick question. Does this program, I know if it says that you have to employ at least 50 employees, is there a UEV program that's available for smaller and micro businesses? Is that a separate program for the UEV tax?
Well,
is this the energy?
Hey, Rosemary. Tim. So there's a couple things. There's a very specific Salem County Energy thing.
Gotcha.
I wasn't here in 2004, so I don't know exactly the genesis of why that was created. Maybe Jenny knows from her prior service of commerce. But I'm sure there was some very specific set of circumstances that led to that program being created. I just don't know what they are. There is a much broader range of UEZ programs that are out there, and in fact, there's some recent public discussion of some adjustments to those programs that I think would be beneficial and positive. A longer discussion, but there's a lot of programs that are out there beyond this one. This is one of many legs of the UEZ.
It's like a carve out or something. Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah.
I don't remember Tim. It was a long time ago. I don't remember.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay, the next matter the next topic is the real estate matters, which I am the chair of the real estate committee. We had two matters that were kind of routine for the real estate committee related to the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority. The committee did not meet this month, but we'll hear all about these two matters from Mr. David Noose, our Executive Vice President of Real Estate Financing and Development. The first matter is going to be for the purchase and sale redevelopment agreement with Regional Development Group, LLC, subsequently assigned to its affiliated Barker Circle Partnership, LLC, for the Barker Circle Complex in Oceanport. David?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman, and good morning, everyone. Staff is requesting the board's consent to the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority's agreement with Regional Development Group for the sale and redevelopment of the Barker Circle Complex in Oceanport. Regional Development Group subsequently signed that agreement to its affiliate, Barker Circle Partnership. The property consists of 7 historic buildings in the Oceanport section of the fort. Barker Circle Partnership will pay $4.85 million to the property and renovate the buildings for mixed-use housing, commercial, and arts-related uses. The statute that created FEMIRA specifically names EDA as a potential redeveloper of the fort, so our consent is requested prior to all closings between FEMIRA and its selected redevelopers. Staff has concluded that the purchase and sale and redevelopment agreement between FEMIRA and Barker Circle Partnership does include the essential elements of a redevelopment agreement required by FEMIRA statute and its regulations, and therefore staff is requesting the board's consent for this transaction. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any board members have any questions for David? Okay. Motion to approve?
A motion.
Reading was first.
Okay, and a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Okay, thanks, Jenny. Okay, I already went out of order, but asked for any comments or questions. If there are none, I will move for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. We're going to stay with Mr. David News here on the second matter, which is a consent agreement of the mortgage with respect to the New Jersey American Water Company easements on Fort Monmouth's main post in Eatontown and Oceanport, New Jersey. David?
Thank you. Staff is requesting approval to execute consent agreements to support to subordinate the authority's interest in certain roadways in Eatontown and Oceanport owned by the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority. These subordinations will protect easement rights that FEMIRA is granting to New Jersey American Water Company with regard to water mains that NJAW is installing to facilitate the fort's redevelopment. The subordinations are necessary because EDA holds a mortgage over the property in connection with a 2018 working capital loan issued to FEMIRA. The proposed consent agreements do not reduce the collateral available to secure FEMIRA's debt. I do wish to note that there are actually 4 consent agreements for the authority's execution, not 3 as called out in the board memo. That's because one of the easements needed to be subordinated to 2 due to a Jersey Central Power licensing right-of-way that runs through the property. Staff is also requesting delegated authority to approve future requests to subordinate the authority's interest in Fort Monmouth property without further board action, provided that any such subordination does not have a negative impact on the authority's collateral position and provided it furthers the redevelopment of the fort. I'm happy to answer the questions.
Okay, great. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Second,
Robbie Angelo, second.
Commissioner, any comments or questions? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. Okay, we are coming close to the end. We now have a series of board memoranda to be presented by Mr. Tim Sullivan, our CEO. Tim?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I'll be super brief. You have 2 memos in your pack. One is related to direct loans. The other is related to the microbusiness loan program. I just want to highlight that there are 30 3-0. Micro business loans approved under the delegated authority. That program has been picking up speed quite a bit. It's a program we launched last summer, late last summer, and have been proving this is essential working capital loans for small businesses across the state, ranging from $20,000 to $50,000. And so nearly $1 million of approval under that program represents an extraordinary output. So I want to thank Christina Fuentes and her team, and Dave Lawyer and the team, and Lori and the team in underwriting, the team in closing as well, and Tina and the team in closing as well, for very significant focus to get that program rocking and rolling at this kind of volume. With that, happy to take any questions or yield back to floor. So we got to still public comment and executive session to get through here.
Any board members have any questions for Tim? Okay, hearing none. We will now move to the public comment. I'd like now to open up the meeting to the public comment portion. First, I'd like to ask Danielle Esser to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting, as well as availability of COVID-19 resources for businesses seeking information. Danielle Esser, our Director of Governance. Danielle?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. As stated by the operator at the beginning of the meeting, members of the public interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Given the numbers of the members of the public on the line, we'd like to go over NJEDA's public comment policy at this time, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted by the operator to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority, and staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A speaker may only speak once during the public comment period, and speakers may provide any written comments via email to staff. For members of the public seeking information on COVID-19 resources for businesses, we would like to direct you to cv.business.nj.gov, which is staffed by business advocates at the New Jersey Business Action Center. The site includes a chat feature staffed to answer your business-related questions to COVID-19. You can also call the state's COVID-19 business hotline, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. The phone number is 1-800-JERSEY-7 or 1-800-537-7397. The portal can also be accessed directly from the NJEDA main page, which is njeda.com. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment for our first question.
There are no questions at this time. Please continue.
Thank you, operator. Okay, if there are no public comments, I'd like to inform the public that the board members are now going to go into executive session. I'd like to first thank the public for listening in and participating. I know there were no public comments, but we are going to go into executive session to discuss a real estate project under negotiations where the disclosure could adversely impact the public interest, the minutes of which will become available when the need for confidentiality no longer exists. A vote will take place after the board returns to the public session. I'd like now to ask a board member for a motion to go into executive session.
Brennan, motion.
Thank you, Kathy.
Caridi, second.
Thank you, Commissioner. Is there any discussion whether or not to go into executive session? Okay. All in favor of going into executive session?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Any opposed?
Okay. Any recusals, abstentions? Okay. The motion passes to go into executive session. Operator?
Thank you. The board will now enter executive session. For members of the public, you may hold the line. Board members and staff will return to this line when the executive session has concluded. One moment. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. Your lines will be silent until the executive session resumes. Thank you for your patience. Please hold the line.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, we do thank you for your patience. Your conference will be resuming shortly. Please continue to hold the line.
This is Danielle. I'm just advising them. Okay, go ahead.
You
should be
sorry,
in the public.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Danielle. We are back in the public session. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. Okay, board members, we have one matter that we discussed in executive session. The item is the amendment to the authority's letter of intent with PSE&G regarding the New Jersey wind port. It's a request looking for a motion to approve an amendment to the LOI with PSE&G regarding the New Jersey wind port project, as we had discussed in executive session. Do I have a motion?
Robert Chinko, motion.
Thank you, Commissioner. Do I have a second?
Brennan, second.
Thank you. Okay, we had the opportunity for questions and comments in executive session. Can I get a vote? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay, if there's no additional comments, I'd like to thank all the board members and the public for their participation. I will now request a motion to adjourn the meeting. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you. And a second?
Second.
Second, Aisha.
A lot of seconds there. Okay.
And not all at once.
All right.
Thank you.
All in favor? Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Aye.
Thank you all. That was a lot to get through. We appreciate it. There's a lot going on, obviously, and deeply appreciate the member support for a whole range of things that we were able to roll forward, not the least of which is small business support. Help is here, as the governor and the president have been saying.
Yeah.
Off we go.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, board members.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day, everyone.
You too.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude your conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.
Please hang up.